Jake Rowe, what's up? How are you?
I'm good, man. It's been a crazy week. How are you?
Good. James Harden.
Wow. What? That's been just a lot today. I remember earlier today, I was just scrolling through Twitter, and I'd see, like, from Hoop Central or Woj or something, just every once in a while, it would be serious talks from the Sixers and Houston, and then serious talks between Brooklyn and Houston, and then I saw they were talking. They kept on putting in asterisks, like they were trying to hide the fact that Brooklyn wasn't happy with Kyrie, and so they said they're willing to trade anyone except Kevin Durant, but Houston doesn't want Kyrie because that would be like another, that's like just another version of the empowerment issues that James Harden is bringing. So and then I just saw whatever happens is going to happen really fast, and then you texted me, boom, Brooklyn James Harden deal. So it's been wild.
Yeah. So to summarize the trade that occurred today, which if you're listening to this, I'm sure you've already heard about it. This is according to Shams Charania about 3 hours ago. The Rockets have gotten Victor Oladipo, Dante Exum, Kurucs, 3 Brooklyn first rounders in 22, 24, and 26, a Milwaukee first, 22 unprotected, and 4 Brooklyn first round swaps, 21, 23, 25, 27. That's what the Rockets got. The Nets got James Harden and James Harden only. The Pacers got Caris LeVert and a second rounder. And the Cavs got Jared Allen and Torian Prince. This is still a fluid situation, but given the information we have as of right this moment, this is the biggest NBA trade of all time. Not as far as quantity goes, but as far as star power goes, you have 2 All-Stars, an MVP, and Caris LeVert, who will likely be an All-Star at some point, potentially this year. So what was your, from a basketball like analysis standpoint, what was your initial reaction from this? Because we've had time to think about it. I guess that it seemed as though the Sixers was going to be what happened, but this kind of just, it kind of hit, came out of nowhere. So what was your initial reaction?
Well, from day one, I've always thought that whatever team James Harden is going to go to, he's just going to drag down no matter how outstanding his individual scoring is. And it's just, it's almost like when someone's like building their own like blacktop team is what it seems like. Like the Nets look like a blacktop team right now. And so with all the BS that, I don't know what's going on with Kyrie. I know he's always got something going on, but whatever is going on is not helping the situation. Cause you already have, you see the stunts that James Harden's been pulling in Houston, and now you see Kyrie going to birthday parties in Brooklyn, and it's not going to be a good combination. I mean, Stephen A. Smith today, I think, said that Kyrie should retire. So, from my viewpoint, that very, very heavily hurt the Nets' chances to winning a championship this year. I don't think it was a good move. I think they traded away not all of, but a very large portion of their depth and their roster for a guy that they already had scoring power. I don't know why they needed James Harden, honestly. It didn't seem necessary.
Yeah, I agree, and I'm a Nets fan, and I'm personally, on a personal level, not from a basketball side, but from a personal level, I don't like the trade because I would rather watch Kevin Durant do Kevin Durant things. I think, at least in my head, it seems like with the events of Kyrie, which we'll get into later, over the last week or so, they don't know what's going to happen with him. So I think that made it way more urgent for Brooklyn to go ahead and acquire Harden under the assumption that, just assuming the worst, it's like hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Worst case scenario is Kyrie never plays another game in a Brooklyn jersey. Best case scenario is he does. I think it's just protection of the franchise at this point. But
I feel like they had better options.
Yeah. Brooklyn. It's strange. like I said, I don't see a world in which they are able to successfully balance all three of those players once and still win games at a high level, because with the current roster they have, I do personally think that it's a little bit deeper than people are giving credit for, especially considering that they do have some money, and they do have three roster spots available. The buyout market's coming soon. That always is a pendulum. But what concerns me right now is thinking about in the Eastern Conference, who is going to be the guy that's guarding Giannis? Who's going to be the guy that's matching up with the best player? The answer to that question is Kevin Durant, who is showing that he's not 100%, but he's still the best player in the East. And that's because offense is a lot easier to overcome off of an Achilles, defense not so much. There's advanced metrics that show that Kevin Durant, when he was at his best, when he peaked, was in the 2016-2017 finals. Defensively, I believe he had the best defensive statistics out of any player in any single series in NBA history. Defensively. So he can do it, or he could do it, but how do you... You can't do that to that level after an Achilles injury. And if he can't be at that level, what is the goal to literally just score more points and allow them to score on offense? Because that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely going with a like high volume scoring approach rather than a even keeled team, I think. I mean, any team that invests in James Harden, you can see they're shifting their approach towards that. But I think just Kyrie has them scrambling, and I don't think they really properly weighed their options.
So on the Kyrie Irving front, over the last week or so, the time is completely of hard, like it's impossible to gauge at the moment. But the report, this is according to Thomas D. Today, the update. Which, by the way, sorry, this is a horrible way to explain this. Kyrie Irving has not played for a week for personal reasons. There's been a lot of hints within front office and the players that they don't know why. It's just personal reasons. They haven't heard. They've reached out, haven't heard back. Report today from Thomas D. Kyrie Irving has reportedly been, quote unquote, furious at the Nets for not getting him, quote unquote, more input on their head coach hiring, and was, quote unquote, not in favor of Steve Nash. His relationship with Kevin Durant recently has also been described as very distant. So, this was the concern. What do you think about that quote? We've talked about this before, but this is confirmation of our concerns.
Yeah, it's going to be a rocky road for them, and it's something that didn't really need to happen. I honestly don't know where Kyrie's going to end up. They're going to see down the season that this trio isn't going to work well for them, this system that they've just completely switched up. I don't know how they're going to figure out a good way to get a fair trade from Kyrie, because that's a valuable asset. Now, granted, he obviously is a volatile. Is that the word I'm looking for?
The quote coming out of the Rockets today, because like you said earlier, Kyrie Irving was made available. The Rockets said no.
And I don't blame them. Kyrie Irving's a great player, but with all the crap they just went through with James Harden, why would you want that again?
No. And it's, you could argue that Kyrie Irving is more of a liability. I'm actually, as we speak, pulling up the basketball reference on Kyrie, because I always forget how much of a liability Kyrie Irving is. He's a fantastic player, hit one of the biggest shots in NBA history. Cannot take that away from him. Amazing talent. Best ball handler we've ever seen. Like, not close. So I'm just going to go down this really quick. Kyrie Irving's first season played 51 games. Kyrie's second season played 59. Kyrie's third season, 71. Fourth, 75. fifth, 53, sixth, 72, seventh, 60, eighth, 67, ninth, last year, 20. So far, out of 11 games, he's played seven. So you're talking about a top 3 point guard in the game when he's there. But over his career, he's played 535 games out of a potential probably close to 800, 900. I mean, that just speaks to your point. Like, we can't argue that the talent's not there, because it is. He's one of the best players in the last decade. But I think from Houston's point of view, it's why would we trade James Harden for someone who we don't know what the fuck they're going to be doing on a day-to-day basis?
As far as I can remember, like, paying attention to basketball, I haven't seen a serious James Harden injury. Obviously, he's a risk off the court. But Kyrie is honestly one of the biggest risks I've ever seen for that tier of a player. And so any franchise looking at him is going to be weary of that. And it's really just, I hate to say it, because I love watching Kyrie play, and I think he's one of my favorite players, but I don't think he's going to get what he thinks he's worth anywhere else.
So just to speak to your point, James Harden has had one season where he's missed more than 15 games. So you're right. I mean, this is a guy who's extremely durable. I think that right now, because he wasn't a locker room issue prior to this. The reason he's pissed off and acting like this and he's throwing a tantrum is because that's been the proven method to get people out of the situation that they're stuck in. But he got, I mean, the first team we heard was Harden wants Brooklyn. Brooklyn doesn't really want Harden, but he's exactly where he wanted to be. So
you got Kyrie to thank for it too.
Exactly. But the question I have for you, take Kyrie Irving out of the situation. From a basketball standpoint, Harden and KD work really well together. The pick and rolls are unstoppable. They both have fantastic playmaking. Defense is obviously a concern, but they're literally going to score every time. Or they're going to get a good look. The question is, when those two guys are either not playing or there's a really big possession, they need to stop. Did they give up too much depth?
I think they did.
Which player, was it Jared Allen?
Yeah, Jared Allen for sure.
Yeah, that one's hard.
Because, I mean, they got DeAndre Jordan, but and DeAndre Jordan is by no means washed, I don't think, but he's old.
He is, and I think Jared Allen is currently in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. Granted, it's early and Miles Turner is leading that conversation, but Jared Allen is in the conversation nonetheless. I don't know how to feel about it. So
I do think Harden is going to be able to shine a little bit more now that he's out of a small ball type lineup. I think he can be more ball dominant and still work within the system. So I think that's going to help him a lot. But those are probably the two greatest scorers of our generation. KD definitely, yeah. James Harden probably the other. And so
it's a toss up between them. It's not close for anybody else. They're in a league of their own.
So I can't imagine, like, they're going to score, but I just don't know how they're going to balance it.
It's hard to envision. The only thing that I can think of is, and it's kind of a weird comparison, but the 2000 Suns with Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, and D'Antoni running the coaching thing. I mean, that invented basketball as we know it right now, the 7 seconds or less system. And they were successful, but when they got to the playoffs, they never could get to the finals. One, because they were running into Tim Duncan. Two, because they were running into Kobe Bryant. And three, because they couldn't get a stop. And that matters so much in the playoffs. I mean, look at the Bucks Heat series from this year.
But granted, you look at their biggest competition in the playoffs. Celtics are going to be trouble for them.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bucks in the playoffs.
That's true, but
I mean, it doesn't even matter who they're playing. The Bucks in the playoffs are just.
I might be wrong about this stat, and if I am, then I'm going to edit it out in post. The only player who has held James Harden to less than league average shooting percentages, the one player that has ever done it, is Drew Holiday.
Seriously?
The one player.
And like on a consistent basis, or is that like a once ever?
Yeah, no. Like if you look at their matchup, their like Basketball Reference head-to-head matchup stats, James Harden does not play well against Drew Holiday because Drew Holiday is so good and he's so strong. So Harden can't, sure, he'll be able to do his little step back. But Drew Holiday, I think he holds him to like 20, high 20s for three-point shooting. And in the paint, Harden's non-existent because he can't body up Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is too strong. Drew Holiday can guard LeBron in the post. Harden's not bodying. To me, that's okay because you have Kevin Durant and potentially Kyrie. But Kevin Durant's going to have to guard Giannis. That's the thing. It's either Kevin Durant or Jeff Green. Those are your two options. So the Bucks.
And then Chris Middleton has been a decent threat this year too.
So good. I don't like Chris Middleton because I think he makes too much money. He is so fucking good. He's so good.
We say this every year about the Bucks, though, or not even us particularly, because I don't think either one of us are really bandwagon big Bucks fans or whatever. Actually, I feel like we hate the Bucks and really Giannis more than most people. But every single year, it's always said, "Oh, the Bucks are making it to the championship. They're the best team in the East by a margin." And then they get to the playoffs, and they're just a completely different team.
I agree. Let's just be clear, though. This year, they are not the best team in the East. It's not.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
I think that the Nets right now, currently, as we speak, have the best roster in the NBA after this trade.
I think in terms of individual star power, yes, they do.
But in the NBA playoffs, that's what it comes down to. This is why it's such a weird juxtaposition, because in the playoffs, it comes down to who has the best player. The Kawhi Raptors, the LeBron Cavs, even though they lost to the Warriors, Kevin Durant was better than LeBron in that series. But LeBron still took a ragtag team of bitches to the finals. It's always about who's the best player on the court. And do I believe that Brooklyn has that in every game? Yes. But do I think that there are ways around that in this context where there's literally zero defense to be played? None. I'm okay with more offense than defense. I'm not so much okay with zero defense at all, because that was last year's Wizards.
Okay, so we're talking about threats in the East. So let's think about a healthy East right now. A full Celtics roster, a full Sixers roster. I'm not saying that they're better than the Nets per se, but they can beat the Nets. I think the Celtics can too. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have been insane this year.
I think they could, but the Celtics are another team that lack defensive integrity. When you're talking about in the paint, Jaylen Brown, one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. Jason Tatum's slightly underrated in that aspect. In the paint, they got nothing. Like, Marcus Smart's probably their best interior defender.
But, like, if you're going against the Nets, I mean, KD can do some work in the paint. DeAndre Jordan can do some work in the paint. But that's not going to be the focus of their game.
No. But can you imagine what Joel Embiid is going to do to that team?
Exactly.
It's going to be 50 points and 20 rebounds. Like,
did Adebayo play against the Sixers when Joel had that his last game Tuesday? Do you know?
No, I don't.
Because he put up...
I think he's hurt.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So let me say,
He's COVID. COVID.
That makes sense, because I was looking at Joel Embiid's recent stat lines and stuff, and he had a crazy game.
He's going off.
Yeah.
He's going off. We're going to talk about him later. We're going to talk about MVP standings later. That's why. I don't know. Only time is going to tell. I will tell you what. We both need to make sure that we are able to watch the first game where they're all going to play together, or at least KD and Harden.
Absolutely.
It's regardless of what happens, I want the Nets to win the championship. Don't think they're going to. So there will be tears. But it's going to be fun to watch. If they win, if they lose, it's going to be so much fun to watch. And if they all do come back and play all three together, that's the most talented combination of three players that we've ever seen in this league. The only other team, the only other one that is close is the Heat. But the Heat did not have the offensive ability at the time. None of them could do all three with interior, mid-range, and three. None of them could do all three. These motherfuckers are three of the most talented one-on-one ISO scorers that the league has seen. They're like three of the top five, probably. And they're all together. I would like to see it from like a fan, NBA fan's perspective, from a Nets fan's perspective. I wish they would not have made the trade. So this leads us into my next question for you. To preface the question, the reports right before this trade happened were heavily, the Sixers are going to go for it. It seemed like it was going to happen within the hour. The deal, and it's funny enough because when Maxi dropped like 39 the other day, you messaged me on Twitter and you were like, do you think that this is going to add leverage so that so Maxi maybe gets thrown into a deal and they get the Sixers get Harden? And I was like, maybe. Turns out the reports today, the Sixers, the Rockets were demanding from the Sixers Ben Simmons, Tyrese Maxey, and Matisse Thybulle, as well as three unprotected first round picks.
That's just too much. I think that's just it. That's just too much.
That is crazy. That is crazy.
Rockets are insane if they think anybody would give them that.
I mean, it's kind of weird to compare the two trades because if the Sixers pull that deal, I'm still a firm believer that Embiid and Harden is an amazing combination. Like, I think that they would work so well. But Ben Simmons, to me, is the most valuable out of those three people. I think he's the second highest trade value player in the league behind Giannis. Personally, that's my opinion. And I also love Matisse Thybulle. Like, he's one of the best defenders in the NBA already, and his three-point shot is slowly, not even slowly, is quickly becoming not elite, but almost. The two trade offers between Brooklyn and the Sixers are like different worlds of value. It's like not close. So that being said, which one of those deals would you have preferred if you were the one making the decision?
Like if I was either the Sixers or if I were the Sixers or the Brooklyns?
You're the Nets in this situation. Would you rather get Harden for what you gave up or allow it to fly, keep your depth, and let that trade happen?
If I was Brooklyn, I would have just kept my team as is. I would have let the Sixers lose all those elements for one player who's not going to be able to carry them. Just because my team is already working. The only thing we had to worry about was Kyrie. Plus, there's other options on the table. So I just would have kept, if I was Brooklyn, I would have kept it as is and let the Sixers deal with it.
I think I agree with that. But it's just, it's so weird. Like, thinking about the Rockets in that alternate reality where it definitely happened, that puts them in title contention. It just does, because Christian Wood is so good. John Wall looks pretty okay. DeMarcus Cousins is DeMarcus Cousins.
When he's not getting thrown out, he's good.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean by he is DeMarcus Cousins, because that's all the motherfucker knows how to do is get thrown out. I mean, that roster would be, think about that. Think about pick and roll situations where you have Ben Simmons as the primary and Christian Wood as the roller or the fader. I mean, and the defense,
You still got Eric Gordon and Sterling Brown as shooters on the outside with that court vision.
And then you have Matisse Thybulle, who can lock up your best player and then fade to the corner and hit threes. And Tyrese Maxey, who can be Lou Williams light. And three first-round picks. I mean, it's ridiculous that they even expected that. But the Sixers were willing to give up Simmons and Matisse Thybulle. In my eyes, that's still too much. Like, if you're doing that trade, Ben Simmons is enough. I said that before.
I think you ride a little harder for Ben Simmons than most people, though.
Yeah, I think he's... if I had to pick... I think that aside from... if I had to pick one player to start a franchise with, right? This is a question that they ask on the GM survey every year. For the last few years, Giannis has won it, not close. To me, it goes number one, Anthony Davis, number two, Giannis, and number three, Ben Simmons. That I think of him very, very, very highly. Like, and the numbers back it up. Offensively, it's a little bit underwhelming, but on an impact basis, he is incredible. Like, every play he is engaged with, he's shown progression towards a shot. But I don't even think he really needs it. I just think that, I don't know. He's only getting better. That's the thing. I think he's 24. Like, I don't know what else to say about it. I fucking love him. I know you don't, but...
honestly, the main reason I don't like him is just because I think Donovan Mitchell should have won Rookie of the Year. Ever since then, I've just had it out for Ben Simmons.
I agree. I agree with that. Have you ever thought about hosting your own podcast? Do you want to start a podcast and aren't sure where to start? Well, our friends at Buzzsprout have made it easy for you to start your own podcast today. We use Buzzsprout and we've been so impressed by the easy-to-use interface and convenient guides to get the podcast up and running. Personally, my favorite thing about Buzzsprout is the ability for me to easily change between multiple podcast feeds that I run. All you need to get a podcast started is a microphone, a computer, and your Buzzsprout subscription. Buzzsprout has a ton of different subscription options so that you can tailor your partnership to your needs and your budget. If you don't already have the gear you need to start recording, Buzzsprout has a bunch of helpful guides on their website to suggest you the gear that you'll need. The Buzzsprout team is passionate about helping you succeed, and they've made the barrier of entry to podcasting extremely easy for everybody. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get their message out to the world. Following the link in the show notes lets Buzzsprout know that we sent you. And it also gets you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan. It also helps support our show. If you've ever thought about starting a podcast, I highly suggest following the link in the show notes. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners, and Buzzsprout makes your partnership easy to enjoy. Back to the show. Now that we've got all that shit out of the way, now that we've harped on it for as long as we have, let's talk about actual basketball. So, the current standings, as we speak, are kind of strange. We knew it was going to be a weird season because of the virus, even though it's fraudulent and doesn't exist, games are still being canceled. So it's shit's weird right now. Lots of dudes are sitting out. As we speak, the Eastern Conference, it goes Boston, Philly, Bucks, Pacers, Magic, Hornets, Nets, Atlanta, New York, Miami. And then you have the dog shit teams. Which are kind of, we expected those teams to be at the bottom. It's the Bulls, the Wizards, the Raptors. Oh, well, we didn't expect the Raptors, actually. I'm going to eat my words. Real bad. To you, Jake, what is the biggest surprise out of all of these teams in the standings?
Honestly, that the Knicks are ninth. That Julius Randle is playing the way he is. Someone on your fantasy, like Mitchell Robinson, I think. That's probably the biggest shock for me, that they're ninth.
Julius Randle is the best player in the NBA.
Okay, hold on. Hold on.
Sorry. Frank Ntilikina. Oh, no, just kidding. RJ Barrett. I don't know what the fuck is going on with the Knicks.
It's working.
But they've lost three games in a row.
Yeah, but they're still in ninth.
They average the most 3-point attempts given, or 3 points made given in each game. So to me, that's like, okay, this is just a weird fluky thing. Now, would you rather see Charlotte or New York make the playoffs? Because right now where they're standing, remember the play-in tournament, where they're standing right now, if the season ended today, they would be in the play-in for the 8 seed.
I think for the Twitter aspect, it'd be more fun to see New York. But me as a fan, I think I'd rather see Charlotte. I like Rozier, and I was not a LaMelo Ball fan, but after seeing how he's changed and adjusted his game to play, how good he has been playing in the NBA, I'm liking him a lot.
His passing is like, he's not Magic Johnson, but he has a Magic Johnson vibe with the passing. It's incredible. And they're a fun team to watch, too. Like, it seems like they've all really bought in. What I do want to say is that I was joking about Julius Randle and Neal Akina and RJ being the best players in the league. But Austin Rivers, man. Austin Rivers is undoubtedly.
But sometimes I just don't know when you're being serious or not.
He has the heart of a lion. He is probably the most efficient shooter. I can't continue. Austin Rivers scored 14 straight in the fourth quarter of a game to win. After the game, he proceeded to say something along the lines of, I've been on bad teams. This is not one of them. We're all bought in. What do you think about that? Because we're talking about the same guy who said, I would drop 100 on Bob Cousy. That's one of my favorite NBA quotes of all time.
I'll never take a man seriously who gets his dad a tech. The dude who was talking trash to Big Baby because he like showed up to practice late or something. Yeah.
Kevin Garnett has a fantastic Austin Rivers story from when Doc was the head coach at in Boston. And Austin Rivers was like a high school player, but was like, he was like the number one high school recruit in his class. And he said that Austin Rivers was at their game, like at a practice or something, and he went one-on-one with Paul George and he fucking smoked Paul George. Yeah, like smoked him. And then he started barking, because it's Austin Rivers, started barking at Kevin Garnett. And the story from Kevin Garnett is that Kevin Garnett like hurt him. Like hurt everything about him.
Dude, I would take out a mortgage on my mom's house to see footage of that.
Oh my God. That shit. And Tony Allen talks about it too. It's on Chris Vernon's Grizzly show. I highly encourage anybody who's listening to go look up that story, because Kevin Garnett is like shady past. I'm writing an article about some of the stuff he's done in the past right now. But yeah, post-NBA career is like one of the better listens in an interview. He's fucking hilarious. But seriously though, Austin Rivers, MVP. Austin Rivers is better than Kevin Durant.
You sound so serious. It's so hard.
Austin Rivers for James Harden, straight up equal trade.
Dude, for people that are just listening to the podcast, they don't get to see our faces and everything. They're gonna think you're a stupid person.
I'm not stupid. I'm just confident.
That has never ever made someone smart.
except for Austin Rivers. So Western Conference. As expected, Lakers 1, Jazz 2, Clippers 3, tied in a three-way tie with the Clippers, or with the Jazz and the Suns for the second seed. Portland, Mavericks, Warriors, Spurs. What's your biggest takeaway from that?
Warriors, better than I thought they were. They've made some really good adjustments. Pascal has stepped up a lot. I saw him and Steph Curry absolutely run through my favorite team, so that was fun for me.
We watched that at the same time, and we were texting back and forth. Stephen Curry is a fucking joy to watch. Great game, though. Like, honestly, that was my favorite game I've watched this season.
It was a great game. I would say with the exception of, like, Minnesota, I'm looking at the West, and there's just not really any bad teams, I don't think. Like, I see these players, or I see these teams here, and I'm looking at the standings on the side here. And some of these guys deserve to be in the playoffs, especially over those Eastern teams.
Yeah, it's interesting because as the standings are right now, Denver is not even in the play-in tournament if it were to end right now. Minnesota should be better than they are. The Grizzlies should be better than they are. They don't have Ja, but they will soon.
I think Houston's going to go up a lot too now.
Yeah, I would agree. A surprising one is that the Spurs are the 8th seed. That's kind of weird. I mean, they're not bad, but
I think that'll die down. I think they'll drop down to like 10th.
To me, the biggest shocker on this one is the Thunder. They're sitting at 5-5.
I haven't watched a lot of Thunder games. I don't know if I watched any Thunder games this year, but I can't, like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I wish Clippers would have kept him. I remember playing 2K with the Clippers, and he dunked on somebody. I was like, who is this kid? And from then on, I was watching him, and I wish we would have kept him. But he is really good, and I'm glad he's in a place where he can shine. I can't pin down, like, what the Thunder's identity is, like, as a team.
I can tell you what their identity is. It's a bunch of guys that got traded for first round picks playing together.
Exactly. Like, I can't tell you like what they do as a team, like how they win.
I was thinking about this earlier, and this is going to sound corny, but I think that Chris Paul being there and mentoring a lot of those guys and installing a culture, which he did by himself, is huge for their success right now. He was the best clutch player in the league last year. Shai is clearly still trying to win. And I believe that Chris Paul took Shai under his wing more than any of the players there. Al Horford, he's still a good basketball player. He makes a lot of winning plays. He tries his ass off.
I just don't watch Al Horford.
He's not someone I like seek out. He's just boring. He's good.
I respect what he does. He's just not that fun to watch.
But Shai is. Shai is a fucking dog, dude. He's so good.
He's going to be big very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he'll be an all-star this year. And this moves us into... There is some MVP odds out right now. Not really odds, but the current standings. So to run it down, I'm only going to go top five. Actually, let's go top 10 because it's interesting. Number one right now, Nikola Jokic. He is averaging, basketball reference, I hate the way they do this. He's averaging 24 points a game. He's averaging 2 steals. He's averaging almost 11 assists, 11 rebounds. And he's shooting 82% from a free throw, 61% effective field goal. And he's shooting 40% from three. So he's almost 50-40-90 on an insane stat line. 11 assists a game for a center has never been done. Number two is Embiid. I'm not going to bore you with the stats. He's really good. Big guy. Watches anime. LeBron is number three. No surprise. Number four, LeBron is...
As always.
LeBron's underrated. Anthony Davis, number four. Giannis, number five. Chris Middleton, number six. CJ McCollum, number seven. DeMontis Sabonis, number eight, Brogdon, number nine, and number 10 is Jaylen Brown. What do you think, what the fuck is going on right now?
Seriously, where is Bradley Beal?
I can tell you why he's not on this list.
I know the Wizards are terrible this year.
You cannot be an MVP if you can't win games.
But his stats are insane.
But he's not winning.
His scoring is insane. Okay, Nikola Jokic is still negative.
You cannot, I agree that he is... not looked at enough, but the MVP conversation in particular is not one that you can be in if you have a bad record. And I don't care how many points he averages, because he's not doing enough for his team to win. Even though it's too much for him to do, he's not doing enough for his team to win. He needs to do more because of how bad his fucking teammates are.
Two, three years ago, when the Lakers missed the playoffs, was LeBron not in the MVP convo back then?
I don't think so, because that was the year that he got hurt.
Okay.
Well, I think that year it was... Who was it? Giannis won it. No, Harden won it. It was Giannis, Harden, and I can't remember who the number three was. It might have been LeBron, but it's LeBron.
That's true. Yeah, okay.
Bradley Beal is not LeBron.
That's true.
And that team went from being like the worst team in the NBA to being almost in the playoffs. If he wouldn't have gotten hurt, they would have made the playoffs. Beal, most underrated player in the league. No argument there. Most underrated player in the league. He should be and will be either first or second team All-NBA. He has no fucking seat at this conversation until the Wizards are 500. I think they've won 3 games.
The Wizards, it's just everyone on there is so bad.
They're horrible.
They're so horrible. So bad, and I feel terrible for them because I'd be dude.
Hey, where's Julius Randle?
Shut up.
I'm not joking. With the way he's been playing, he should be in this conversation, but they're also 3-6. It's the same argument. I'm not saying fucking Julius Randle is as good as Bradley Beal, but if you look at the numbers, do you think Malcolm Brogdon is as good as Bradley Beal?
How recent are these standings?
Today. Malcolm Brogdon's going off, but he's not as good as Bradley Beal. The reason he's up here is because they're 7-4.
A lot of these guys honestly just look like most improved candidates to me. Or not a lot of them, but a fair bit of them. Sabonis.
Brogdon won it once. Sabonis will be in the conversation. Middleton hasn't improved. He's just Middleton. Jaylen Brown should be in the conversation.
Well, I think I would put Chris Middleton in the most improved conversation just because he's consistently right now, I feel like, consistently playing on, what's a good way to say this? He'll have great games and he'll have terrible games, and he's consistently playing his great games. I don't know how long that's going to last, but he's consistently playing to like his fullest potential where he's at right now.
Well, the MVP thing is something we're going to keep an eye on throughout the season and keep it going.
So for one of the new things that me and Christian are trying to get going on the podcast, we're trying to bring in some recurring segments that we can do and be consistent with it. And one of the ones that we wanted to do was something that's never, ever been done before. I don't think anyone's ever thought of this, actually. And that's just going through and picking a team of the week. Nobody ever. I think we're the first ones. So with that, it's pretty self-explanatory. We're just going to go through recent performances. It might not always be a strict 7-day time period just because we don't know when episodes are going to be up, and sometimes there's a performance that we just have to throw in there that might fall out of that time span. So, but regardless, it's going to be within that. It's going to be a soft time frame that we're going off of and just picking who we think had the strongest performance. And yeah, that's the gist of it.
As of recent.
Yeah, as of recent.
So since it was your brainchild, you go ahead with the first team of the week.
All right. I'll go through my whole list first, and I'll let you go through your whole list and we can talk about it. So my list is Steph Curry, Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, AD, and Embiid. Steph Curry had an insane performance against the Clippers, like right after a 62-point game. And then he just came in, I think it was like a 22-point deficit, came back from that Warriors aren't necessarily bad, but the Clippers should have won that. They just went insane in that second half, really.
When Wiggins is the one hitting the dagger to put the Clippers out of reach, there's an issue.
Pascal put Zubox, like, he looked wasted after that. Like, dude, that dude was huffing and puffing, seriously.
He looked like he was, like, ice skating.
They took Zubox out, and he looked like a chubby middle schooler after gym class. Like, the dude was huffed, like, he couldn't catch his breath. They were just running straight at him. It was hilarious. Bradley Beal, just insane scoring this entire season so far, and he hasn't slowed down, I don't think, at all. Kevin Durant had a great game, also mainly based off his scoring. Joel Embiid, based off his scoring. AD, I think it was Christian Wood, was saying how much he was looking forward to playing AD, and then AD went and shot like 7-for-9, and then the next night, he's just been shooting really well, and AD's having a great season as expected. And then Embiid had, I think, a 45-point game against the Heat. So those are the reasons for my team of the weeks.
Yeah, all of those guys have had, like, extraordinary performances. One thing that's interesting is right after Steph Curry worked your team, the night after, he had the worst shooting percentage of his career. The worst shooting performance.
I think he did that. I think he did that in like his 2016 season where he broke some 3-point shooting record, and then the next game broke another 3-point shooting record for like one of the worst shooting performances. And I think it was like 2016 or 15.
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I remember he has a tendency to do that. I mean, he's the best shooter of all time, but he does. I mean, it was 38. He put 38 on the Clippers, right? And then the night after, he shot 2 for 16 from three. It's interesting. It's weird.
Well, what really shocked me though is because Curry, I think, he has the largest gap, I think, between being such an amazing player and so bad with like clutch shots.
Yeah.
But he was hitting them on the Clippers, which I think that's just the Paul George curse. But either way, yeah, he was doing it.
He does not have good clutch playoff numbers. He has good clutch regular season numbers, but in the playoffs, it's not where you would want it to be.
Especially when they had that little rivalry with OKC back mm-hmm. when Russell Westbrook and Paul George were there, and right after KD got traded, especially.
The cupcake games.
Those were always really good games.
Those are some of my favorite games I've ever watched. I have a whole series that I wrote like a year ago. It's a 5-part series with preset scripts and everything, where I went back and rewatched my 5 favorite games of all time. 2 of them were from that season when Durant went back to OKC for both of those games, and they like where Russ and him were getting into it. Those are some really fun games. And Steph in one of those hit like one of the most insane shots of his career, where they were down two, and there was like 13 seconds left on the clock, and he just takes the ball up and literally pulls it a step in front of the half court line and bangs it.
He was like up against the sideline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was that weird season where they decided it was a good idea to light the 3-point line up every time someone took a three. And so he takes the three from like not even near the line, and they lit it up just to signify he was taking a three. That's the only gripe I have with that. But I seriously considered picking the Warriors because they've had an extremely impressive week. They're not a bad team right now. Okay. They don't have a bad record. I don't think they're that great. But I decided not to pick the Warriors, and I might have misunderstood the segment. Not going to lie. This is going to get better. But I literally just picked a team. I picked the team that was impressing me this week.
Oh, okay. Okay. And my fault. The team, I should have specified.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's funny. I'm going to tell you what I initially thought, and simultaneously I'll think of like 5 guys that have impressed me. The team that has impressed me the most over the last week or so is the Charlotte Hornets.
That's a young team too.
Yeah, and I lived in North Carolina, and like I was somewhat a Hornet or Bobcats fan at the time. Not like a real fan, but like I rooted for them just because I lived there. And they've been so bad. They've been so bad forever. They've made the playoffs a couple times, gotten the shit kicked out of them. Kemba was like a cult hero. The first NBA game I ever went to was Hawks Bobcats. And honestly, some of the best jerseys in the NBA, one of the best home arenas, the classic retro teals, for those who can't see, which is everybody except for me, Jake Rowe, when I said they have some of the best jerseys, shook his head like a...
It wasn't a nose, like a... I would have to think on it.
They are fucking hot. The retro ones. The new ones are all right, but the retro pinstripe teal ones with the purple accent... Anyways, the Hornets have seriously impressed me because me, like everybody, when they signed Hayward to that massive extension or the massive contract, I was like, what the fuck? What is the point? He is the glue that brings all of these weird pieces together. There's obviously some level of buy-in from all the players because they all play their asses off. Bismack Biombo for some reason has been kind of impressive.
He was not on my radar. Yeah, he was not on my radar at all before this. I was doing Sean's. I just downloaded FanDuel, by the way, and I was doing Sean's lineup for it last night. And I'm pretty sure I put him on there because after I watched Charlotte Pelicans, where LaMelo Ball almost had a triple-double, and then the next night he did have a triple-double, I was seeing Bismack Biyombo, Gordon Hayward, LaMelo Ball, Terry Rozier. Everyone was just they buying into the system, and it's working pretty well for them. I mean, obviously they're not top of their division or anything, but like
the only player on that team that's disappointing me a little bit is Devontae Graham. Mainly because he played so well last year that his shooting percentage this year is not great. It's lower than I would want it to be. It's not bad. I can do better than that. But compared to what he was doing last year, it's not very great. So I would expect LaMelo to kind of take his spot in the starting lineup pretty soon. One more little thing about the Hornets. I love watching them play. They're really fun. They've taken the number one spot on my league pass teams this year. They play fast and fun and hard. LaMelo Ball, I don't know what the fuck is going on with his jump shots. He needs to figure it out. Because every time he's taken a shot, it's been different. Every time. He's never taken a shot that was the same as the one prior. And I know you don't necessarily care about that, but it's so important for longevity.
I agree. That's an important thing. I just remember that's how Lonzo was when he was at the Lakers.
He still can't shoot though. He can shoot.
Right, but it's
not where it needs to be.
Well, he can't really shoot, but he was still experimenting with it, like with his shooting, mm-hmm. like couldn't get his regular shot down. And honestly, I think it made Lonzo a better player, not being able to have that aspect of his game. I think it grew him to better adjust to the NBA level.
He stepped it up defensively. Because he couldn't shoot.
He set up defensively and facilitation-wise, coming out of a UCLA system where he was the dude. He was the scorer,
I
feel
like. He was so good on and UCLA.
So it made him a much more well-rounded player, and I think that's what it's doing for LaMelo right now too. Mm-hmm. But I also think LaMelo is going to be able to get that shot down and really be better than Lonzo.
I think so too. Well, not defensively, but I think they're different. They both have the same flash and the same swag where it's like they play fast, they sling the ball around on a string. I will say LaMelo's touch on his passes is better than Lonzo's. Like, he can do more off the dribble with passes with both hands. He can see things that Lonzo can't because LaMelo's towering over everybody else. That's the one thing about LaMelo that makes it so unique is he's 6'8", right? 6'6", something like that. 6'6" to 6'8", somewhere in that range. Everybody who's guarding him, except for Simmons, he can see over the top of, which opens up that entire fucking floor to him at all times. I know he's a rookie and they're like 13 games in or whatever, but to me it's very concerning when I see a professional basketball player who, whether they make the shot or not, isn't doing the exact same thing every time. I mean, I've seen LaMelo take pull-up threes where his mechanics are perfect, and they fucking airball. And I've seen him take off-the-dribble threes where he'll shoot, and then he'll kick his legs out like he's fading, but he's not. And then he'll take a step right after he lands, and he'll drain that. And he also does these... Have you seen the thing he does where he'll drive hard? He'll drive hard, like look to the left like he's about to pass it. And then he'll do like a floater from in between the three and the free throw, like a weird floater, and he doesn't follow through on it.
Yeah.
That is a horrible shot.
That's the thing with the Ball Brothers is people will make the argument like, oh, if your shot looks stupid but it's going in, don't mess with it. But the Ball Brothers, both of them, and if LiAngelo gets back to the NBA, I suspect it'll be the same with him, they've come up through high school, college, and the NBA, or in the Lithuanian League or whatever, with just the weirdest shot mechanics that I've ever seen. Like, almost, it almost looks like Joakim Noah's free throw. And it looks stupid, and people would make the argument for Lonzo, because he was in UCLA, he was hitting them, but they would make the argument that, oh, it looks stupid, but just let him be, because he's doing it, and now he gets to the NBA, where It doesn't matter if you look, he's just not hitting it. And he needs to get it under control. And it's such a big part of your game to like completely turn around when you're at this level.
Yeah. And credit to Lonzo, because his jump shot, if he were to take a jump shot right now and we were to record it and then go back and look at his pre-draft combine and see his jump shot then, I mean, it's a totally different thing. And he's making them now. Like, he's actually shooting a decent percentage now. Not where you want it to be, but it's improvement regardless. And I've noticed, because I've watched a lot of LaMelo Ball from the Aussie League, LaMelo's making strides towards a better jump shot. But the parts of his shot that he's fixing aren't the parts that I'm concerned with. Like, he's fixing his follow through and his wind up. I'm more concerned about his feet, because he'll duck bill his feet or do the opposite, and it literally just depends on how he feels in the moment, I guess. But enough about LaMelo. The Hornets have been the most impressive team to me over the last 7 days. And to answer your actual question, which I misunderstood, the guys I would pick for my five are going to be Malcolm Brogdon, Jaylen Brown, even though he hasn't played in a couple weeks, or couple games. Three. Brandon Ingram. Who stood out to me? Tatum and Sabonis. Those will be the guys that have impressed me. Individuals. Actually, no. Fuck Sabonis. Christian Wood.
Christian Wood's gas. When I was going through, I haven't seen very many. Yeah, no, he's cold this season. But like going through, I know in this modern day, positions are really fluid in basketball. Like, it's really just guards and forwards, basically. And then, like, a lot of times you'll have a center that just really can't play anything else. But there's just haven't, I feel like, been any standouts from, like, a power forward. Like, there's been really good centers, like Jokic and Christian Wood. But and Embiid, obviously. Sorry, I forgot about him. But I just haven't seen any, like, big power forward good performances from them, really.
Well, you know, back to what I was saying earlier. Julius Randle, kind of the GOAT. Don't roll your eyes. I agree, though. It's been weird. I mean, it's a weird fucking season. We haven't really talked about it today. We're not 100% sure that the season's even going to get finished. If we're being honest, the movement as of right now is that it won't. And if it does, I was listening to Ben Golliver on the SI pod, and he was talking about how, this is an interesting thing to think about that I hadn't until he said it. When you have a season where everything's so weird, right? So early, it's so weird. And the reason for that is a virus. Do you remember in the bubble how everyone was like, is this going to be an asterisk? Like, is it actually going to count? It's different in the bubble because there's no excuse. Like, if you get that shit, it's your fault in the bubble. Daniel House as an example. The difference right now is because it's not necessarily the player's fault. So if everything's fucked up and, like, the Knicks make the playoffs and for some reason win the first round against, say, the Bucks, for whatever reason, because Giannis gets COVID somehow and he can't play, there's no argument. That's an invalidated championship, because that's a contender who is now out due to things they cannot control. So the argument is like a moral one, and it's weird. It's like the NBA needs the season because of money. The players need money. Everybody who's involved needs the money. But what is the risk of continuing the season if the end result is going to be shrugged off anyways, and you're putting people at risk in the meantime?
Well, I don't think the NBA is very concerned with player risk, for being super honest. I do think there are some NBA officials who do genuinely care about players, as we saw with the bubble. But I think the NBA organization as a whole is most concerned about their money. And while they're going to take
they're going to take dips in their income, they're going to make enough to survive if they were to just continue the season, regardless of who had to sit out, who got COVID or not. So I just
shout out ESPN.
Brooklyn beat New York.
Shocker.
In case you're curious.
It's just strange. And like, I know personally, I'm going to speak for you because I believe that you would say this as well. I would prefer that everybody stay safe over do this. And I don't know if you saw this report, but there was a very, very concerning report that came out yesterday. I don't remember who, excuse me. There have been players that have tested positive now two times. One player has contracted the virus three separate times. And that's terrifying. Not only for basketball, but for the world in general. So, on behalf of both of us, we would prefer that people stay safe rather than continue a season that may or may not be taken seriously by the viewer. But it's kind of fun just to see how much is changing so quickly, but it's also a pain in the ass to keep up with, and it's hard to talk about because of how much is constantly changing and everything else that's happening in the world. But I think that going forward, things will hopefully get better since Mr. Two Time is going to be out of here in like 7 days. That was a Trump reference. But
I'm sorry, this is off base from basketball. Even with him out, stuff's getting so crazy that like, I mean, people are like, it's getting wild. So everything is so fluid right now.
Who knows? Yeah. All we can all do, whether it's a professional athlete or not, is do our best. So that's what we're doing. Mr. Jake is, don't say where you're moving to, but Mr. Jake is moving. So it's going to be a little bit inconsistent as far as this podcast goes for the next probably week or so. But that's okay because basketball is the only reason we're on right now is because James Harden got traded. Straight up.
This was the emergency. This is the emergency episode we were talking about in the last episode.
Yeah, the emergency episode that is now running like an hour and a half long. But whatever.
That's how it always goes. We say 20, 30 minutes and then we just talk forever.
And then we're about to go play fucking Call of Duty or something. But but shout out to Buzzsprout. Y'all go check it out. Link in the podcast notes. Let them know we sent you. Thanks to Jake for his expertise and his original idea that I literally did not understand.
Some of my ideas are just too
mega brain
exactly.
For me.
Just for the human, the general population, so that just doesn't understand me.
He's a misunderstood. But, thanks for listening, whoever's listening. Stay safe out there.